Well, I got involved with specifically the anti-globalization movement when a number of us realized that the WTO was coming to Seattle. And I have a lot of friends who are organizers and activists, and we started having these meetings. And what we realized is that we had to start building coalitions, and we had to start preparing for what it was going to look like on the ground in Seattle, and how we were going to accommodate the people who were there, and why we were doing it in the first place. So there was a lot of organizing before Seattle, WTO actually happened. And I think that what we started realizing is that we were all on the listservs. We were on email, and we started realizing how many people were going to be coming and from how many diverse areas, and that we had this, I think for the first time, we had a feeling of a kind of solidarity because we had a common enemy. You know, I hate to use the word enemy, but we realized this is something that we really cannot tolerate anymore. And before that, there had been APEC, the Asia-Pacific Economic Council, that had been in Seattle. And there were a lot of international people came, and it was very exciting, but it was very small in comparison. But it gave us a kind of energy to realize what we were up against. And then we had GATT, we had NAFTA, and the MAI, and then the WTO was coming to Seattle. So I was in part of those organizing meetings, and it got closer to the time of, I got frustrated actually with the meetings because, as you know, it's hard to organize and it's hard to find the common ground. And what made it easier than normal, I think, is because we realized, all right, we're going to have to work together. And so I actually started doing some more media work when the idea of this media center came in, and that was like 2 months before, and we were connecting with all the independent media journalists around the country, primarily after the Grassroots Media Alliance conference that took place in Austin in early September. So this is like almost 3 months prior. And so I started getting involved with some of the organizing for that. We had some meetings, we were on lists, and that was pretty exciting because I consider myself a media activist. I was a public news director for 4 years at a radio station where I just did really radical information, and it was great because I could pick from so many different diverse pieces, and I realized that if we don't have media that we can actually as a tool to express those stories, then no one's going to know about it. So it was really a public education thing. So we started working with the community and the organizing committee to say, okay, well, we want to get the message out about what you guys are doing and who's coming to town, etc. So that's a little bit of the background leading up to the WTO. And then we did the Independent Media Center, and we were able to have a space. And what's wrong with globalization? First of all, I think the current trend of globalization is all about corporate control of global institutions, financial, social infrastructure, and the privatization of what I think are the public commons. So there's the fact that it's a corporate interest, and it's for profit, and it's not about people. That to me is like the first thing. Second is like that the trend is all about privatization, which means we have no more commons for people, and that's in every single aspect of our lives. And that is, it's very difficult, as Maude Barlow was saying earlier today, it's very difficult to reverse the trend of privatization. And I think that, privatization, globalization, and then the word globalization, it's way too big. It's too encompassing. It's like, oh, we're going to dictate for the whole world different policies. And I think that what happens with that is we have homogenization of culture, and we lose diversity, and we have monocultures all over the place, figuratively and literally. So we have monocultures of the mind, as Vandana Shiva talks about. And I think that when that happens, you lose a kind of creative vitality, you lose the individual nation's ability to express themselves, and we have, you know, what is the U.S. exporting right now? Entertainment! That's what we export, and military arms. So I think in addition to the cultural homogenization, we also see monocultures of our diversity, of the kind of we're destroying nature at a really incredible rate. And so what we're doing is we're planting tree farms. And also, you look at branding across the planet, and everybody is wearing the same clothes. I mean, that does get to a kind of a cultural thing, but I think that that's just kind of insane. If we have more freedom of expression, then we have more empowerment. And I think that globalization takes that away from us. And it puts control, it takes, and then on the local level, I think local grassroots is where initiatives have to arrive from, where empowerment arrives from, or where decision-making needs to reside. And the current system is about taking away decision-making authority and control out of local, out of regional, out of national, and putting it into essentially corporations. It's, you know, it's transnational. It's like we don't have nation states anymore. We have these huge institutions which are governing us, and nations are forced into actually signing on to those agreements. So that's another reason why it's very dangerous, and it's undemocratic. It's completely undemocratic, and it's unnatural, and it's not very much fun. Right. Well, that is the most difficult question that's facing us. And here at the World Social Forum, people are really striving to look at what some of the answers possibly might be. And I think that there are a lot of really amazing initiatives that are happening on lots of different levels. This state in Porto Alegre is the city in Brazil is a really incredible model. And I think that people should look to that. I think that there are other models that we could look to in city planning and natural resources and, looking towards more natural models, etc. But I think that solutions, one really simple answer is there needs to be more dialogue, for one. If we can actually engage more people in a participatory process, so it's no longer like this idea of representatives up there, because look at what we've got with representatives. In the United States, we have a president that a lot of people don't feel like they voted for, and then he really even shouldn't be president. That's a classic example of what the dangers are of the system of representation. So the electoral process, I actually think, has got to be completely just toss it out the door. I mean, I think that we're going to need to get really creative of how we engage people in the process, because people have ideas about what works. First of all, if we want to solve some problems, we can actually make a list of what doesn't work. If it doesn't work, throw it out. And then look at the things that actually are working. People know what they are. We could make lists of them and then discuss how to actually implement them. So I have no easy answer to that. I think that it has to come from the people. It has to be about people finding a voice and feeling that they have a legitimacy to that. And because of that, then there's a kind of shared ownership, and there's a desire to work cooperatively. I think if we're going to change it from and start to do something with like networks between countries and make agreements, because we're going to have to do that as well. You know, we're going to have to talk to each other. We're going to have to get over the idea that difference is negative. We're going to have to see difference as something exciting and maybe a point of friction. And a point of friction is oftentimes one of the more creative places where we can maybe discover something. And people are so afraid of actually encountering that space. So more dialogue, more meetings like this where we actually propose solutions. There's conferences like the Bioneers Conference that takes place in San Francisco every year, where amazing, there are a lot of environmental solutions are proposed. We don't know about them. We don't know about all the incredible solutions that are currently happening. It's because who controls the media is the people who are like opting for globalization, and they're huge, you know, military, industrial, entertainment complexes that own that. And they're not interested in us finding solutions. They're interested in keeping us disempowered and not letting us know that there's actually these pockets of resistance and creativity all over the planet. Well, I think that that's, as we see independent media start to have a stronger and stronger voice, that's going to shift. While at the same time, the movement that's happening, the global democracy movement, the international movement for like trying to deal with this, as they come together more, we can give a voice to that, and more people will find out about it. The internet is a really great tool for exposing and for also articulating alternatives and viable solutions. So, you know, the next World Social Forum will probably be a really interesting event, and hopefully some initiatives will come out of this, and we'll see more people come away and go back to their communities with an idea of what's a participatory budget and what we could have a city that's a little bit more like Porto Alegre, and conversations that people have had. Well, I think that's another example of monoculture and homogenization and monopolization. In 1996 in the United States, we saw the Telecommunications Reform Act, and what it did is it allowed for even more consolidation of the ownership of our the media outlets in every single medium that you can possibly imagine. And so what happens is you don't get local programming. You don't get the stories that are really of significance to the community. And then on top of all of that, just so that people don't forget, because we're not told this in the current media, is that the airwaves are, oh, they belong, they're another of the commons. They actually belong to the people. But the people have no access, they have no, it's impossible to get, have any kind of ownership because of the way the regulations are and the way FCC is just right in the hands of the National Association of Broadcasters, and this is specifically for the U.S. I think there's other countries that are further along on the spectrum of media democracy. But it still is a global problem. So too much media consolidation, and the media should be more in the hands of the people, because that's who it actually should reflect their interest, and it should be in the public interest. So I think that's a fundamental problem that we are still dealing with in a lot of different ways. And there's a number of different models that are currently out there and solutions that are actually happening. So there's been, I think in the last 2 years, and you know, it's been quite a gradual kind of transition to what I call more media democracy. And we've seen micro radio, pirate radio. They can't keep it down. Even though it's supposed to be illegal, people are using it all over the place. It's becoming more accepted. So more people are hearing the news that's coming from their communities, and they're very excited about it. And they're realizing they have a choice. During the WTO, this was a very exciting moment because we had the Independent Media Center in the heart of downtown, in the middle of the protests, in the no protest zone, and the people knew that there was an alternative to what was happening on the television, because they would come in and they would see it on the internet. That was really powerful for the community in Seattle and all those people who were there and then who went back home, because they realized it didn't have to be the way it currently was on the television. And, you know, we think that's a really simple step, but it's a shift of consciousness. And then when you realize that, you realize it can be even better and better. So the use of the internet, I think, has really empowered people. The low technology that's happening with digital and all that. And, you know, I'm involved with the Independent Media Center, and I see that as one really incredible, powerful model for linking up media activists and facilitating the production of media of stories and articles. And then a really important element of this, it's not about the professionalization, it's about civic journalism. It's about people who realize, I'm not a journalist, they don't think I'm a journalist, I don't have a degree in communication. And it's like, no, you have a story to tell. You're involved in your community. Maybe you're involved with some group that you would really like to have that story told. You can go and you can just publish it directly on the internet if you have a computer and an internet access. So I think that is a really powerful trend, and the growth of the Independent Media Center Network has been phenomenal over the last 13 months, and I think that's a testimony to it fulfilling a need internationally and across the planet, and it's just one model. There's a lot of other really exciting community video work. I've been talking to some people here in Brazil and Rio. They do incredible things with using video to empower people and empower youth who are in the favelas, and so I see it as a tool of empowerment and putting the tool of communication back in the hands of people. Thank you.